again, and welcome to Foreplay Radio Sex Therapy. I'm your host, certified sex therapist Lori Watson, author of Wanting Sex Again, and blogger at Psychology Today and WebMD. And I have with me Dr. Adam Matthews, my co-host, who's a couples therapist, psychotherapist, and president of NCAMFT. Foreplay is dedicated to helping couples keep it hot. Each episode, we cover an aspect of sex that impacts your sex life and something that you can relate to. So if you find our discussions helpful, please give us a review on iTunes or Stitcher. We would love it if you would tell a friend about us. You can find us also on the web at foreplayrst.com. And if you have a comment or a topic that you'd like us to talk about, we'd love to hear from you. Please send them to us at info@foreplayrst.com. Thanks for listening. Now on to today's topic. Good morning, Adam.
Hey, Lori. How are you?
We are not usually here this early.
it's making us a little batty this morning.
But Adam brought me coffee, and I brought Adam coffee because we both know it's like we need caffeine.
So we've had a lot of it this morning.
Yeah. I selfishly, he asked me if he should bring some coffee, and I said yes after I already had coffee.
That's okay.
Because selfishly, I thought, you know, two lattes better than one.
That is always the case. Two lattes are always better than one, especially at 8 o'clock in the morning, for
Absolutely.
Sure.
Absolutely. All right. Our episode today is on how to stop the fight.
How to stop the fight. And fights, I think people are scared of fights. Don't you?
Yeah.
I mean, do you think fighting is a good thing or a bad thing in general? Or is it a neutral thing?
No, I mean, I think we have to fight. I think we have to have conflict in order to have clarity in our relationships. But I think that the anger and the, you know, the way it can degrade can be problematic for intimacy.
Yeah. So people don't tend to fight well
all the time.
So that's the key, is like we're even stopping the fight. We're wanting to end the fight well and not do away with fighting completely.
We can't do away with conflict. I mean, holding things inside that we know need to be discussed, or we know that we have differences with our partner, we have to be willing to do that.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, it's so hard because all of us, when we're in the thick of it, don't we think that our partner is out to get us or not caring about us, or you know, they don't know our needs and or care about our needs, or if we met their needs, that would be great. They would just like walk away and not meet our needs. I mean, I think there's just this deep sense of, will my partner care enough if I meet their needs to come back and see my needs? And it's just kind of human nature to worry about that.
Yeah, fighting can honestly be a trust builder in a relationship if it's done well, right?
Yes.
Because it ends up, because I think it does what you're saying, is it answers a lot of those questions when you're able to go through it and come out on the other side well, when you're able to come out, when you're able to sustain it and it not cause rupture in the relationship, then it comes out and it increases intimacy, it increases trust, it increases your ability to have confidence in the relationship. But tell me if you see this. Two of the things that I see that couples do a lot is they either avoid the fight and they stay away from it because they're so conflict avoidant. They're afraid that the conflict is going to somehow rupture the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
Or two, they do not fight well and they escalate the fight. And then the fight, there's no resolution to what happens. And it just keeps building and building and building until they just both have to walk away basically from exhaustion.
Yeah.
Right?
So it's either too little or way too much.
Yes.
Is the problem.
Yeah. What do you think?
I think you're right, Adam. And I think we have to, when we're not angry, you know, when we're thinking about it at a time that we're not necessarily in a conflict, we have to think about, what do I really want here in the relationship? Okay. I want to meet my partner's needs, and I want my partner to see my needs and to provide a path for them to meet my needs, you know, as most effectively as possible.
Yeah.
And so intimacy, you know, it develops out of that. And I think, you know, that's really hard because most of us bring up conflict when we're mad.
Yeah.
You know, something triggers us or we feel like threatened in some way, and then we bring it up. The person who usually brings up the conflict is the pursuer. They're the ones who see all the problems. And the distancer is often saying, right, there are no problems except that you're angry.
Yeah.
That's the big problem here.
Yeah.
And, of course, you know, I deal with most people who are dealing with sexual fights, who have sexual differences. And you know, and that becomes so personal and so, you know, like primitive in terms of, oh my gosh, if I don't fight for this, my very soul will shrivel, you know. And I think it's true because sex replicates our childhood needs for touch and to stay alive, you know. And I think in adult relationships, there can be this desperate sense of, if my partner doesn't meet my sexual needs, I am literally going to shrivel on the vine. And so there's this desperate element about the way we talk about it. And I think we have to stay in our adult brains, you know, say, like, kind of managing the childlike, you know, experiences on the inside that say, okay, you know, I can help you. We'll get through this. You know, my partner does care about me. Kind of reassuring ourselves that our partner does love us because it can feel so desperate.
I think one of the things you're saying, Lori, that's really resonating with me is that fights a lot of times manifest out of a desire to get our needs met, right? Like our needs, whether they're sexual needs, whether they're needs for security, whether there's needs for emotional validation, whatever those needs are not being met. And we don't feel like our partner is being responsive to those needs. And so we're trying to get them met.
Right. Exactly.
And so especially in a pursuer distancer relationship, the pursuer sees what you're saying is the pursuer sees that those needs are not getting met. And a lot of times they even see that their partner's needs aren't getting met.
Yes.
And they can't figure out how to do that. So they're like that tends to be the place where like some of the intense fights erupt in that where they're trying to get their needs or their partner's needs met.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
I would agree with it. And I would say to all the pursuers out there, I really, you know what it's like to be in a relationship and see the problems, right? Mm-hmm. They are the person who kind of is the lighthouse. You know, they're looking, they're shining the light out there on all the rocks and on all the issues. And their partner sometimes feels like, you know, they don't care. They don't care about the problems. But the reality is the distancing partner, oftentimes it's by the not doing. You know, the pursuing partner, it's with the criticism that they injure the relationship. And it's the withdrawing partner, it's the not doing that injures the relationship. It's the not seeing. And oftentimes because they are more conflict avoidant and the other person, you know, as a pursuer, I don't actually like conflict at all. But I will have conflict if it feels like it will be better on the other side. You know, it gets
if it feels like a necessity.
It's like throwing up.
You know, you don't want to do it.
Feel really sick and it's like, but you know you're gonna feel better if you just go ahead and do it, you know, just have the conflict.
I think I like that analogy. It was just like throwing up. I think it can be good. I think it's definitely healthy for a relationship. You know, I think in talking about the pursuer and distancer thing too, I had a distancer tell me recently that one of the reasons they didn't pursue resolution is because they had solved the conflict for themselves inside their own head. Right? And I think that's what distancers do a lot of is the conflict sometimes gets resolved in and of themselves or inside them, and so they don't see a need to continue to talk about it.
And I think distancers, too, they're so sensitive to the anger of their partner. You know, that they're not about to bring up the conflict because it's like, no, then my partner is just going to be mad and pissed off at me. So why would I do that? Even though they really do hurt on the inside. There's things that bother them. But they just don't have that same sense of courage. They would rather be sick all night than throw up.
Yeah, that's true. But I think when couples go through this, managing conflict by avoiding it or just escalating it and not getting any resolution, like it really, either one of those tracks can lead to some break in the relationship or lead to disconnection, which also leads to, I mean, you're going to disconnect sexually as well a lot
of
times.
Right, it's a lack of intimacy. When there's something between us, there's a lack of intimacy.
Okay.
So we have to do it. So we do have to fight.
We do have to fight.
But we want to fight in a way that points us to a direction, right? That our goal is intimacy.
What do you feel like are some of the traps that people fall in when they're fighting?
You know, I think the biggest trap is people get ugly fast. It's a Southern word. I don't know if we use this in, you know, other places of the country, but ugly means that it erodes you know, a person's character. They'll call names. They'll say something sarcastic. They'll, you know, say something really pointed and critical. I'm always surprised. And sometimes people are really good at it, you know. So they're not necessarily saying, "You dummy." But the way they say it, you know, there's a put down in it. And I'm like, oh, just don't do that. Don't go there. You know, when it starts happening in session, you know, my heart just sinks. It's like, oh, you're just shooting yourself in the foot, man, when you do that.
Yeah. A lot of people, I think, they either implicitly or they explicitly talk about the other person in a way that means the other person is either broken or their character is deficient.
Right.
Name calling is the explicit version of that, right?
Sure.
They're like, they name you jerk, bastard, how dare you do something like that. But then there's also the implicit version of that, which I think is if you would only do this, like if you would, like that's implying, or you can just never
look. You're stupid, or you're thoughtless, or you're uncaring, or something.
Or there's even just you can never love me in the right way. Like I just don't think it's possible for you, or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Like that's the implicit version of you're broken. There's something messed up about you that can't work here, and that people get defensive on that kind of stuff, right?
And I think that happens so much in sexual conversations, Like, there's something wrong with you. You don't like sex. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't see you as a sexual person, or you're obviously not very sexual. Oh my gosh. I'm like, ooh, that is so toxic.
I think they also, too, when we were talking a little bit about this beforehand, too, but we just don't want to accept the person the way they are. A lot of times it's really hard. We're trying to change somebody to either change their mind or change what they're doing, or get them to do something different.
Sure. And I think it's a polarization when we're in a fight, right? We want them to be different, and we see them all one way or all the other way.
Right. It's no context.
Right. It's like they're all black. They're sexless. You know, I have people after people who tell me, you know, my partner is sexless. But then I talk to the partner, and it's like, they masturbate with some fair regularity. You know, and I mean, it's like they're not necessarily doing well in the partnered sex arena, but they are actually very sexual. But their partner doesn't see that. It's not coming toward them. And so they kind of label it, and they go to an extreme. I think all of us, when we're in a fight, tend to see our partner in an extreme way.
Yeah,
it's all or nothing.
We lose sight of their strengths.
Yeah.
And so we can't honor their strengths. It's all about their weaknesses. Again, I think that if somebody comes at me and is telling me all the ways that I'm weak or that I'm failing, my defenses go up, man. Like I'm ready to fight at that point and come back and not listen at all.
Yeah. And I think we lose sight of the subtlety of the issue.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, sometimes our partner does come our way in these ways, or does meet our needs. But when we're in a fight, we're trying to emphasize the way our needs are not met. You know, so we, and then what does the partner do, right? They defend themselves. I had sex with you last Tuesday.
That's right.
Well, that wasn't sex. That was only oral sex. I was like,
gosh. Why do we have to do it your way? Why can't we do it my way?
Yeah. So,
well, why don't we come back after the break, Lori, and talk about and give some tips on how to fight better.
Okay,
right?
Good.
We don't want to stop fighting. We just want to fight better.
Okay. Well, you're listening to 4Play Radio Sex Therapy, Dr. Adam Matthews and Lori Watson, and we are talking about how to stop the fight.
Wanting sex again. How to rediscover desire and heal a sexless marriage by certified sex therapist Lori Watson.
Each chapter is designed to fix one of the problems that cause low libido, from early marriage through the childbearing years, even all the way through menopause. I've also had men read it and tell me that for them it was the most hopeful thing they read about resolving sexual problems.
Look for Wanting Sex Again on Amazon.com. You can also talk to Lori Watson for therapy in person or via Skype.
I offer couples counseling and sex therapy, and I think about both aspects of the relationship, emotional intimacy and sexual technique, and that combination together helps marriages be happy.
Weekend couples intensives are also offered. Improve your sex and improve your relationship with Awakening Center for Couples and Intimacy. Find out more at awakenloveandsex.com. Awaken what's possible.
It is one of my great joys in life to be able to really help individuals and couples find strength in their relationships and really find hope again.
Licensed marriage and family therapist, Dr. Adam Matthews from Matthews Counseling.
I work with a wide variety of issues, including depression and anxiety, marital issues, issues with adolescence. I believe that therapy should be designed around you, that it should be personalized to who you are and to your unique situation.
Therapy is available in office, online, and by phone.
I want therapy to be comfortable for everyone. At our office, you'll find that we sit around a fireplace in deep, comfortable chairs, look at the problem differently, and offer practical solutions for you to take home and utilize outside of the therapy room.
Schedule today and rediscover hope.
You can find me on the web at matthewscounseling.net, Matthews with one T. You can contact us through email or phone and find a lot of resources on our website, matthewscounseling.net.
Hey, we're back. This is Foreplay Radio Sex Therapy with Dr. Adam Matthews and sex therapist Lori Watson. And we're talking about how to stop the fight and kind of how to fight fair and clean as well and why to fight.
Yeah.
So.
Because fighting, because we have to, right? As we talked about in the first half.
We have to throw up.
We have to throw up. The only way out is through. We can't go around it. We can't go under it. Can't go over it.
gotta go through it. Okay.
Right. Going on a bear hunt.
Did
you read that? Did you read that book with your kids?
You know what? I did that bear hunt when I was in, you know, like Sunday school, summer camp.
Yeah, it's a camp
when
song,
I was
a
child. Yeah. I mean, the priest used to come over and do bear hunt. I mean, it is like one of my fondest memories. And then they made a book out of it, which is so cute.
The book is great.
It's a great book.
The bear comes back and hides in the like chases them back and they have to go back through.
It's a bear!
It's a bear.
Yeah, that's kind of like conflict. It's a bear!
Yeah,
we're scared to death.
We have empathy for the bear in our house because the last page of the book is the bear. It just shows the bear walking away from the house because he's gotten shut out. So we end the book. We go on the bear hunt. They come back and we just, our last sentence is just, "Aw, poor bear."
The lonely bear. So sweet. So is the bear the pursuer or the distancer, you think? It's kind of like maybe the distancer hiding in the cave and
then gets provoked. But then he changes. He becomes the pursuer, which is what you need.
Yeah.
All right. I'll check a little bit. But we talked about like that for couples to be able to fight well and to be able to stop fights when they need to. They've got to have they've got to establish some expectations for how fights are going to go in their relationship, right? I mean, and that's just conversation of talking about that. But we have some that we would recommend, and everybody can be different on that. You can fight, your fighting style might be different than your neighbors, right? Some of us are just, we just need to be loud. And by some of us, I'm talking about myself. Like, I just need space to be loud. And
I need to be loud.
My wife is, I'm actually, I've pulled back some from how loud I would like to be in fights. My family was loud. I grew up in a loud family, so
like surprises me totally.
Oh yeah, totally. No, I'm telling you, my wife has changed me on this.
Adam and I have not had a big loud conflict yet.
No, but when I fight, like I want to get it out. Like I verbally throw up just loud, and I like that. So. We had to moderate that. She thought I was angry all the time.
I do think that the loud thing, volume, it makes a big difference to some people. Some people can tolerate that, and other people, once it gets just to an intensity level, they shut down.
That's right.
They totally shut down.
I think you got to talk about that. I mean, I think that's a conversation to have is how fighting occurred in your childhood because it's going to affect what you can tolerate.
Let's talk about your childhood, Adam.
Let's talk about my childhood. Okay.
We'll talk about your childhood too.
All right. My
childhood was loud too.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're similar in that. I think we if we ever did have a fight, it'd be knock down, drag out, but. I think I've said it before, I had a friend I worked closely with for a long time, and he did not like to fight at all, but his wife did, and so we would end up having the fights. and uh-huh. we would always say that it was convenient for him that I was his friend because he didn't have to fight at home. She would just fight with me, and I'd fight with
her.
There
you go. There you go.
Anyway.
Okay, so I think the first thing to remember, and this is a reminder for all of us, as you've just heard, Adam and I are human. And, you know, I think it's pick the time of the fight.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times people pick an inconvenient time, or they're thoughtless about it.
Or they're fighting when they're trying to run out the door.
Or they're going on vacation.
Yeah.
You know, so many times I prescribe to couples to go away on a couple retreat, you know, a weekend away. And that's when they have their big fight.
Yeah.
And it's a way that they sort of deregulate intimacy, right? Mm.
And I think a lot of people think that they can't choose the time because they think fights just happen.
Yeah.
And then it's hard
they got that throw-up feeling.
Yeah. And so, but you can say, and it's much easier when you can get a lot more calm and peace when you're able to say, hey, I know this is important to you. I know we need to talk about it, but let's pick a better time.
Exactly.
And
for yourself. I mean, to me, more than anything, I think in my adulthood, this to me is the mark of at least my own adulthood is I move the glass away from the edge of the counter, you know, so that it's not going to spill.
Yes.
Right. I mean, like noticing the accident before it's going to happen. Yeah. That to me is a mark of adulthood. And I do that with my own anger and upset about things. I ask myself most of the time, is this the right time to have this fight?
Yeah.
You know.
And I think it's a mark. I like that. The mark of maturity and a mark of adulthood. I think the mark of maturity in relationships is when you're able to say, listen, I know we're disagreeing on this, and it's okay that we disagree, but let's go on about our day. We're taking our kid to the zoo. We're going on this vacation. We both have to go to work. Let's just say we're going to talk about this. We're both exhausted. We know that this is okay. Like, our relationship is going to survive it. So let's pick a better time.
Uh-huh.
You know, the other thing.
And most fights. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
See, we're talking over you. I mean, most fights are repetitive, right?
Oh,
I mean,
yeah,
by
yeah, yeah.
and large, we have several issues that we circle around in marriage and so, or in coupleship. And so, I mean, that fight's going to come around again.
Yeah.
You know, so, but, you know, if you can wait on it for the more optimal time, do it.
And pick a better space, like people or place to fight, right? Do not fight in the bedroom. Like, that is not, or just especially as you're going to bed, like, and you're getting in the bed, like, that should not be the place that you have your next big knockdown, drag-out fight.
Yeah, not in the bedroom.
Yeah, I mean,
But what if you have kids and there's, like, no place to get privacy? I mean, you know.
Well, I mean, I think you have to put them in their room. Give them a book. Like, you know, have them do something. I mean, I think you...
After they're asleep.
Wait till they're asleep. So that's the time thing,
out
right?
On the porch.
Yeah, I mean, I think finding... Because
Go
I think
for
those,
a walk.
If the bedroom is the place that you're fighting, like, that makes it really hard to do the things
you
want to do.
It anchors our feelings. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sorry. You finish.
No, I was just going to say it makes it hard to rest. It makes it hard. The bedroom, right? What do we say? The bedroom should be about sleep and sex?
Yeah.
Either of those things.
It's a sanctuary.
Yeah, either of those things when there's fighting happening or that's the place you're associating with all your fights, both of those things are less likely to happen.
I like that. I like that. I do. We had to have a conversation with one of our adult sons recently. I said, let's go out to coffee and talk about it. He's like, no, I don't want to be in public, like, when we talk about this. You know, it's like, it wasn't that big a deal, but it was, you know, important enough that he thought it could be conflictual.
Yeah.
So he's like, let's stay at home and go into the living room and, you know, talk about these things too. Yeah. It's kind of his direction with college and all that. So
let's pick
a place,
we'll run out
pick
of time.
A time.
Let's go to our second one.
Okay.
Start with a request.
Oh, yeah. So most people start a fight with a complaint. You know, this is what you're not doing for me, or this is what you've done to me.
Yeah.
And really, if you can formulate that into a positive thing, even when you're hopping mad, like, think it through. If you're hopping mad, you're not ready to have the conflict. Mm. You know, it's like, really think through, what do I need? What makes me happy?
Yeah.
You know?
And that makes it much more acceptable to your partner as well.
It's a lifeline.
Yeah, absolutely. They have a chance to meet that request.
Yeah, because they can be thinking in their mind, well, I could probably do that or I could do part of that. So they know where you're headed with it. I think the problem is when you start with a complaint, it's like a siren. You know, there's this, and the bomb is coming.
That's right.
You know what I mean? yeah. you know, it's about to explode, and their tension is growing and growing and building. They don't know where you're going with it. They don't know what you want, and so anxiety is entering into their heart. And it's like, if you give them the, you know, kind of the thesis right at the beginning, you know, what I need from you is I want to have sex twice a week. Yeah. It's like, okay, that could be doable. You know, now maybe talk about some of your feelings and how you see this happening. Yeah.
And when you start with the complaint, the person has no choice but to take a defensive position, right?
Exactly.
If that bomb is coming, they're going to hunker down in their bunker, or they're going to find some way to fight back so that their defenses are up, right?
Right.
As opposed to, I think our third kind of suggestion to couples is if your partner is coming to you with a request, right, that you adopt a listening to understand position rather than a listening to respond.
Yes.
I think too often couples listen to respond in fights, and so they're not even really hearing what their partner's saying.
Right.
They're projecting what they think they're saying. They're taking it personally. They're getting their position ready to fight back and to defend why they did this or why they did that. You don't really hear how the other person has been injured or what they need. And so when you can adopt a listening to understand position where you're trying to put yourself in their shoes, put yourself, see things from their point of view, it makes things go much smoother, because then I can honor the hurt that you've had. I can validate it. And we can try to figure out a way for that not to happen again.
Yeah. So it's staying curious about your partner's perspective, and which is hard when the bear is chasing you, right?
That's,
really hard. If you poke the bear and the bear comes out and chases you, I mean, it can be really scary.
Absolutely. And I think by that, I think when you're saying stay curious, I think that means the listener then, or the person that's trying to hear the request, can ask a lot better questions.
Sure.
Right? They can ask, well, why do you feel, what makes you feel this way? Help me understand that. That doesn't make sense from my perspective, but tell me more about it from yours.
Right.
You end up with a lot better understanding, I think.
Yeah. And I have a business consultant who has helped me sort of think through how to make decisions with employees and things like that. And her counsel is ask 10 what questions. Because what is makes people less defensive than why?
Why
are you like this? Why do you do this? But just like, tell me what you think before we, you know, are getting ready for bed, what you're thinking about in terms of if we're going to have sex or not. You know, tell me what makes it more amenable during the day. Tell me, you know, I mean, it's all the what questions versus tell me why you're so asexual.
Well, that's what, and I'm glad you brought it back to that, because that sex seems to be a place where it gets really hard to ask those type of questions.
Sure.
We want to ask the, why don't you want to have sex with me?
Yes.
Why do you never want to have sex? As opposed to asking those types of questions that you were talking about, the what questions of what turns you on? When are you more sexual? All those type of questions.
Strike why from your vocabulary.
The other suggestion that we have that I think we both see couples fall into a lot is just they commence with blaming, name-calling, mockery.
Sarcasm.
Anything that falls under disrespect, honestly.
Yeah, it's disrespect, and I like the way you've framed it. It is absolutely disrespect. I just hate it when I hear that come up in a session with couples, because I know that, you know, the other partner is already wounded. You know, you struck them.
Oh, yeah.
You know, essentially with your words.
It's hard to have...
And no hitting. I mean, for the record,
clearly.
No hitting,
no plate throwing, no shoe throwing.
Yeah.
Don't throw anything.
Well, vases. No,
vases.
Okay.
I think the thing that you're talking about, the one reason that it's so damaging to relationships is because disrespect so often slides into contempt.
Yes.
And it very quickly becomes contempt for your partner, which, you know, we know Gottman says is one of the number one things that leads to
divorce
in relationships.
Right.
So I think maintaining that, and it's so hard to give good intention to my partner when I'm being disrespectful like that.
Sure.
I can't see things from their position. I can't give them good intention and give them the benefit of the doubt when I'm being disrespectful.
And one last save that I would say is, you know, you can sometimes call a do-over. When the fight has gone bad, just stop it. Just say, you know what? We've gone too far. I've gone too far. Let's call a halt to this. We'll come back to it. I need a do-over. I need to think so that I'm more constructive. And, I mean, just say we need a do-over and just finish it. Way better than keeping going, thinking you're going to reach understanding. If things have degraded, it's time to stop the fight.
Yeah. And I think our last one that you're kind of leading into there, that is especially important considering we've been talking about pursuers and distancers, in this context is that we've got to respect when our partner needs a timeout, but the partner that caused the timeout has to come back to it at some point and agree to continue to talk about it, right?
So if you say, I'm done, I can't talk anymore, say, let's get back together in 2 hours tomorrow morning, Saturday, you know, and make it happen.
Yeah. It then becomes on the partner that caused the timeout, though, to come back and reengage the conversation, right? And it does have to be in a reasonable amount of time. Right. You can't say, let's come back to this in two
someday.
Months. Yeah. Or someday down the road.
Someday
when
I like you again.
Yeah, that's
okay.
Right.
Okay. Well, you've been listening to 4Play Radio Sex Therapy with your sex therapist, Lori Watson, and couples therapist, Dr. Adam Matthews. Thanks so much for listening. And we had a big burst of listeners recently, and we are so grateful. You must be sharing with your friends, and please keep doing that. We would love some more ratings and reviews. That would be awesome.
Yeah, don't forget to find us on Instagram as well.
Instagram. Yeah. What's your Instagram account, Adam?
My Instagram is Matthews Counseling.
Right, and Matthews I think Counseling. Ours is 4Play Radio Sex Therapy.
So, yeah, find us there.
Thanks. Hey, help us stay on top here at 4Play. We'd love it if you would subscribe and share it with your friends. And please take 1 sec and rate and review us. Thanks so much.